Good morning. Some of you may be familiar with the name Mike Rowe. Mike Rowe was the host of the TV show Dirty Jobs. He's been in a lot of commercials for Ford trucks. See him other places from here and there. He also has a radio program. It's a podcast. It's an internet radio program. That's played on the internet, and it's called The Way I Heard It. This radio program, he tells a story about something from history, a historic person, historical object. Doesn't tell you what it is until the end of the story, kind of like Paul Harvey used to do, very similar to that. A while back, I was listening to one of these, and it inspired this lesson. So I'd like to share with you a slightly modified version of the story that Mike Rowe told. In the mid to late 1950s, a man named Joe was sitting in the office of a man named Bob. Joe was there because he wanted to advertise his product, wallpaper cleaner, on Bob's television show, but Joe had no money to pay for it. No money to pay for the commercial. Bob also wondered if Joe knew that the audience for his show consisted mostly of 7-year-olds. So this confused Bob a bit and asked Joe, "Even if you could afford to advertise on my show, why would you want to? How many 7-year-olds are going to want to buy wallpaper cleaner?" So not only did Joe not have any money for advertising, but Joe also wanted Bob to demonstrate the product on television, to actually demonstrate how this product works. In exchange for this, Joe would give Bob a small percentage of future sales. It was the craziest proposal Bob had ever heard, but he eventually agreed. So why would he agree? Why did he agree? To find out, you have to go back a generation, though, back to 1933, when pretty much every home was heated by coal. One of the drawbacks of heating your home with coal was, apparently, I have no first-hand experience of this, was the black smudges that would go up the walls. Ribbons of black soot would apparently stretch from the floor to the ceiling. And cleaning, if you had wallpaper, cleaning the wallpaper was tricky sometimes because back then it was actually paper. It wasn't the vinyl wallpaper like we have now. So if you tried to clean it with soap and water is not good on paper. It would damage it. It just wouldn't be very good. It wouldn't last very long. So finding a good wallpaper cleaner was important. So a man named Cleo McVicker, who ran a small soap company, claimed to have a revolutionary product. And he was trying to make a deal to sell 15,000 cases of McVicker's wallpaper cleaner to the Kroger Corporation. The Kroger Corporation agreed, but on the condition that Cleo agreed to pay a $5,000 penalty, which would be about $90,000 today if he did not actually deliver the product on time. Cleo agreed that he would agree to this demand, and so the order was placed. Cleo was ecstatic, except there was a problem. He didn't have a product. The wallpaper cleaner that he had just made a deal for had not been invented yet. He did not have it. He sold the product before he invented it. So with the deadline looming over him and $5,000 on the line, Cleo, along with his brother Noah, began experimenting with a variety of combinations, many different chemicals and materials, until he finally hit upon the magic recipe. What they came up with was a thick white paste that removed the soot from the walls without leaving a residue or tearing the paper beneath. So Cleo made his deadline, and soon McVicker's wallpaper cleaner was selling in stores across the country. But not long after Cleo struck it rich, natural gas came along, meaning there was no more soot to dirty up the wallpaper. Then came vinyl wallpaper, which meant no more need of a special cleaner to clean the wallpaper. And then came a tragic plane crash, meaning there was no more Cleo McVicker to run the company. So the company came into the hands of Cleo's son, Joe, who now had to find a use for a product that no one needed. This was the same Joe who was trying to persuade one of America's most trusted television personalities to personally demonstrate an obsolete cleaning product to a national audience of children in exchange for 2% of future sales. Of course, Bob did agree to the proposal, and it's a good thing he did, because that product, that obsolete product that had been sitting on the shelf, that had been selling for 35 cents a pound, was now flying off the shelves at $1.50 a pound. Why, you ask? What made this product that no longer had any use become so popular? The reason is because they changed the packaging. It's partly because they changed the color, partly because they changed the odor. But mostly it was because Joe saw the true use for his father's product. And this is how Bob Keeshan, also known as Captain Kangaroo, made millions and millions of dollars playing with a cleaning product on television as millions of kids watched in wonder. And that's how Joe McVicker's company has now sold more than 2 billion cans of his father's wallpaper cleaner by changing the way it was used, by putting it on TV for the children of the nation to see, and by changing its name to something more appealing: Play-Doh. When this was sold as wallpaper cleaner, it did reasonably well when it was needed, when it could be used as wallpaper cleaner. But when it was no longer needed, when it was no longer useful as wallpaper cleaner, it had to be reimagined, altered just a bit, and then sold as a toy. As a wallpaper cleaner, Play-Doh had a very limited number of uses, but as a modeling compound, which is what the packaging says it is, a modeling compound. As a modeling compound, it can be, has an almost infinite number of uses. It can be anything your imagination wants it to be. It can be a cat or a dog, a car or a plane, a tree or a mountain, Doug just left, or it could be a snake. I was reading, if you combined all the Play-Doh that's ever been made and made one long snake with it, because that's what a lot of people do with Play-Doh, it would stretch around the earth 300 times. It's a lot of Play-Doh. If Joe McVicker hadn't seen the possibilities of his product, in the product that his father had created, to see the true use of the product that his father had created, he would not have been able to sell his company a few years later for $3 million. And the world would not have one of the most popular children's toys ever. So Play-Doh is now used in a way that it was not originally intended for. I guess if one still needed to clean their wallpaper, if you still had wallpaper in your house and needed to clean it, you probably could still use it for that. But there's probably not too many who would use it for that or need to use it for that. But generally, that is not what Play-Doh is used for today. A few months ago, when we were studying the book of Judges, as we were reading through the Judges, there were a few items that were used in ways that they were not intended for. They were used in ways differently than what they were originally imagined for. In Judges chapter 3, verse 31, it says, "After him was Shamgar," Shamgar's the third judge, "the son of Anath, who killed 600 men of the Philistines with an ox goad, and he also delivered Israel." An ox goad. Killed 600 men with an ox goad. Oxgood is a long stick, about 8 feet long, has a point on one end and a scraper on the other. The point is to goad, to urge on the oxen that are being used, and the scrapers to clear clods of dirt from the plow. Not meant to be a weapon, but that's what it was used for. In the fourth chapter of Judges, the commander of the Canaan army, Sisera, after his army of chariots is defeated by God and under the command of Deborah and Barak, Sisera runs away after being defeated, and he believes he has found protection in the tent of a Kenite woman named Jael. Judges 4, 19 through 21. Then he said to her, "Please give me a little water to drink, for I am thirsty." So she opened a jug of milk, gave him a drink, and covered him. Then he said to her, "Stand at the door of the tent, and if any man comes and inquires of you, and says, 'Is there any man here?' you shall say, 'No.'" Then Jael, Heber's wife, took a tent peg, and took a hammer in her hand, and went softly to him, and drove the peg into his temple. And it went down into the ground, for he was fast asleep and weary. So he died. And then in Judges chapter 15, we can read how Samson was arrested by his fellow brothers from the tribe of Judah. He's arrested and bound to be delivered to the Philistines. Judges 15, 14 and 15. "And when he came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting against him. Then the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and the ropes that were on his arms became like flax that is burned with fire, and his bonds broke loose from his hands. He found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, reached out his hand and took it, and killed 1,000 men with it." The purpose of these items, an ox goad, a tent peg, donkey's jawbone, they're not intended to be weapons. That's not what they were made for. That's not their intended purpose. But out of necessity, not necessarily out of... They weren't good for that anymore, kind of like Play-Doh. Play-Doh wasn't good for a wallpaper cleaner anymore. It wasn't popular, but these items still were used for their intended purpose. But out of necessity, their use was reimagined. They became a weapon because that's what they needed to be, to help. That's what God needed them to be, to use, for his people to use to defeat their enemies. And it's not only things that can be repurposed to be a tool for God. Sometimes it's animals. Sometimes animals can even be used differently than their intended purpose in the name of God. In Numbers chapter 22, we can read of a man named Balaam. Balaam was kind of a soothsayer or a magician, and the king of Moab, a Canaanite country, he was afraid of the children of Israel because they had just come up from Egypt. They had just been delivered from Egypt, and they were coming towards his land, and he was afraid of them. So he wanted Balaam to place a curse on them so that they wouldn't interfere with his land and get in his way. So they come to Balaam, asking him to do this, and then after they leave, God comes to Balaam and tells him, "Don't do this. Don't put a curse on my people." And he says he won't, but then Balak's men come back again and urge him on it again. They want him to put this curse on his land. And God again comes back and says, "Okay, go. You can go with them, but you can only say what I want you to say." So he gives them permission, but only say what I want you to say. So the next morning he gets up, leaves with his donkey, they're and some servants, and they're all going to go to this place where Balak is. And it doesn't say so exactly, but apparently God knew better. He could see Balaam's heart, and he knew that Balaam wasn't going to say only what God wanted him to say. Balaam was going to say whatever got him the most money, because they were paying him to curse the children of Israel. So God places an angel with a sword along their path that only the donkey can see. Only the donkey can see this angel. And the donkey, three times, veers off the road, off the path, in order to save Balaam. So he's protecting his master, his owner, But Balaam doesn't see it that way because he can't see the angel. So each time he thinks it's just this stupid donkey veering him off the road. So he gets off and he beats his donkey each time. Three different times he beats this poor donkey. So then in verse 28 of Numbers chapter 22, you can read the rest of the story. It says, "Then the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, 'What have I done to you that you have struck me these three times?' And Balaam said to the donkey, 'Because you have abused me. I wish there was a sword in my hand, for now I would kill you.'" By the way, that's not what I would say to a talking donkey. "So the donkey said to Balaam, 'Am I not your donkey, on which you have ridden, ever since I became yours to this day? Was I ever disposed to do this to you?' He said, 'No.' Then the Lord opened Balaam's eyes, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way, with his drawn sword in his hand, and he bowed his head and fell flat on his face. And the angel of the Lord said to him, 'Why have you struck your donkey these three times? Behold, I have come out to stand against you because your way is perverse before me. The donkey saw me and turned aside from me these three times. If she had not turned aside from me, surely I would have killed you by now and let her live.' And Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, 'I have sinned, for I did not know you stood in the way against me. Now, therefore, if it displeases you, I will turn back.' Then the angel of the Lord said to Balaam, 'Go with the men, but only the word that I speak to you, that you shall speak.' So Balaam went with the princes of Balak." So this poor donkey of Balaam certainly was not used like a normal donkey would have been. It started out that way, just fine. She was being transportation for Balaam, but it did not end up that way. In order to achieve God's message, in order to make his message clear to Balaam, she had to be used differently. And God saw to that by giving her a voice, by letting her speak to Balaam to get his attention, to show Balaam the error of his ways and the power of God. Another animal not used in its intended purpose, used differently, can be found in the book of Jonah. In the first chapter of Jonah, I think we all know how Jonah was thrown overboard because he was running away from God, stowed away on a ship, and there was a great storm on the sea because of that. And through his decision and the other sailors on the ship, they decided to throw Jonah overboard because it was displeasing God. So they threw him overboard. They threw Jonah into the water. And then in Jonah chapter 1:17, it says, "Now the Lord had prepared a great fish to swallow Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights." Now, I always used to think that being swallowed up by this great fish was part of a punishment for Jonah, that this was part of his punishment for running away from God. But I think maybe it was more trying to save Jonah from drowning. I mean, Jonah was here in the middle of the Mediterranean, Mediterranean Sea, not an ocean, but it's still a big body of water. And I don't know how far they were from coast, but it's probably not too far. I mean, probably far enough away that it would have been hard to swim. So this great fish comes and swallows Jonah and takes him to shore. Because in chapter 2, verse 10, so it says again, "The Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land." So this was God's way of, again, delivering his message to Jonah, but also saving Jonah from possible drowning. I don't know if Jonah, how well he could swim or not. But again, God intervened. God used this great fish to serve his purpose, to remind Jonah of what he really should be doing. So no matter what the thing or animal is, just because it's used one way doesn't mean that God can't use it another way. I have another prop this morning. Anyone know what this is? Hedge ball, hedge apple, various different names. What are they used for? Keep mice and bugs. Anything else? What? No, it's not a mothball. A little different. Anything else? What else are they used for? What? Throw them? It could be used as a weapon. Yeah? What was that? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's the most common belief, is that they keep away insects, mice, cockroaches, spiders, box elder bugs, crickets. Interestingly, though, Iowa State University toxicologists were interested in this as well, so they extracted the compounds from this, the insides. They extracted it and concentrated it. And under concentration, it did. It did repel the mice and the insects and everything else bad. But under their studies, they found that just normal hedge ball, there's not enough concentration in the hedge ball, one hedge ball itself, to repel the insects. But that doesn't make people not use them for that purpose. Just because it might not be a fact, and under studies it doesn't work, that doesn't change people's belief that it can still be used that way. But really, that is the only use for them. It is called a fruit. It's the fruit of an Osage orange tree. It's called a fruit, but it's not an important source of food for any wildlife. Most studies have found that animals found it unpalatable. It's disgusting. So they don't use it for food. There's a milky juice, I guess, that's present in the stems. And when they fall off, it's kind of on the bottom part there, too, where it's hanging on the tree. That milky juice, it can be irritating to the skin if it gets on you. So they're really not all that pleasant. They're big, so if you have these trees in your yard, they're a pain. They're too big to mow over. What? Yes, they are. Yeah, the trees are thorny. I read that too. So they're just kind of an overall nuisance. But there is a almost use for them. I mean, people can use them for that purpose, whether they work or not. That's unknown. But even in something like this hedge apple or hedge ball, as unappealing as it is, there can be a use for it. And even if that the use that we use it for, that might not be its main use. There might be a use that we just haven't found yet, that it's still to be determined. There may be people in the world, maybe people here, thinking they're a hedge apple. You may think you're a hedge apple. You may not think there's much use for you. There's nothing good about you. There's nothing usable about you. But the Bible is full of people that were flawed. People who seemingly had very little value. Didn't seem to be of much use at the time. Some of these people thought very little of themselves. Some were overlooked. Some were looked down upon. Some were probably hated. But God found a use for these people. Moses was a slave. He was born a slave and raised as a prince of Egypt. In Acts, we're told when Moses was 40 years old, he killed an Egyptian and then ran from Pharaoh. And then he lived the next 40 years as a shepherd. He had tried to lead his people at that time. He tried to convince them that he could deliver them, but they didn't see him that way. They rejected him. They didn't see his use. And when God called upon Moses after those 40 years as a shepherd, Moses didn't think that he was of much use either. He was trying to make excuses that he couldn't talk very well. He wouldn't be able to lead God's people. He didn't think he could be of any use to God. But God saw how Moses could be used. Exodus chapter 4, verses 11 through 16, the story of the burning bush, when God is speaking to him, and Moses has made these claims how he's not fit, there's no use in him. It says, "So the Lord said to him, 'Who has made man's mouth? Or who makes the mute, the deaf, the seeing, or the blind? Have not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth, and teach you what you shall say.' But he said, 'O my Lord, please send by the hand of whomever else you may send.' So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, "Is not Aaron the Levite your brother? I know that he can speak well. And look, he is also coming out to meet you. When he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. Now you shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and I will teach you what you shall do. And he shall be your spokesman to the people, and he himself shall be as a mouth for you, and you shall be to him as God." So God saw that Moses could be used to lead his people out of Egypt, and God was helping him to do that. He was providing a way for God, for Moses to be of use. We're familiar with Rahab, the woman Rahab. Rahab was a prostitute in the city of Jericho. Now, in the city of Jericho, this profession might not have been looked down upon as much as it is in our society, in our culture, but it was still looked down upon. It wasn't something a little girl would probably grow up wanting to be, and her parents would probably not urge her to be that. It wasn't a very highly dignified profession, and God certainly did not approve of it. But God saw another use for her. During when the Israelites were about to cross the Red Sea and go into Canaan, they sent two spies to look over the land, and she was able to hide these two spies to save them and allow them to relay their findings back to Moses. So she was able to help and be useful to God, even though she was looked down upon, even though she at one time would certainly think that she did not have any use for him. And because of this, she is mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11. This is Hebrews 11:31. "By faith the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace." God had a better use for Rahab, and when the situation was there to be of use, she was. Then David. David was just a shepherd. He was just a watcher over his family's sheep. When Samuel came to anoint one of Jesse's sons to be the next king of Israel, David's own father, Jesse, did not even make David available to be presented to Samuel. He had all of his seven older brothers there present themselves to Samuel to be the king, but his own father didn't even see him as a candidate or a possibility to be king, overlooked his own son. Samuel had to ask for David to be brought to him. But God saw the usefulness of David. God saw that David could be used for great things, like killing a giant, unifying Israel, establishing Jerusalem, bringing the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem, and conquering many, many Canaanite nations. And of course, David wasn't perfect. His adultery with Bathsheba, the planned murder of her husband Uriah, is just more well known of his faults. But even with that, we can still read what Paul says of David. He's quoting God, and what Paul says of David in Acts 13:22. "And when he had removed him," when God had removed Saul, the previous king, "he raised up for them David as king, to whom also he gave testimony and said, 'I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will. From this man's seed, according to the promise, God raised up for Israel a Savior, Jesus.'" God called David a man after his own heart, and who will do all of my will. "And from this man's seed, according to the promise, God will raise up for Israel a Savior." God had a use for David, even though his own father overlooked him as being useful other than being a shepherd. God knew what he could really be used for. And then finally we come to Paul himself. Paul, a great example of someone who completely changed. Just very similar to the story of Plato, because his name changed as well. Paul, when he was called Saul, was a persecutor and murderer of Christians. He was there when Stephen was stoned to death. But God knew that this was not Saul's true use. So God stopped Saul, made him blind for 3 days, and told him to go to Damascus. And he retold what to do. that God spoke to Ananias, who was a disciple within Damascus, and told him that Saul would be coming to him, and Ananias was a little apprehensive about Saul coming to him because of the things that Saul had done in his past. But God told Ananias of his use for Saul. Acts chapter 9, verses 15 and 16. But the Lord said to him, "Go, for he is a chosen vessel of mine to bear my name before Gentiles, kings, and the children of Israel. For I will show him many things he must suffer for my name's sake." God had a new use for Saul, to be a chosen vessel for God, to bring the name of God to the Gentiles, the kings, and the children of Israel. That's pretty much everybody. And like I said, his name was changed to Paul. Those are just some of the people in the Bible who could be thought of as, who thought of themselves as not being useful, or we would think as not being useful, given what we knew of them before. But God was able to find their true use. And if we think that we're a hedge apple with no apparent use for God, maybe we just haven't found the true use yet. Maybe no one has found the use for us. Like the hedge apple, if all that's good for is keeping away spiders, then that's good enough. But there may be something more that we haven't found yet. God can certainly use some uncommon things for his use. Whether it is a tool or an animal or a person, God has a use for all things, both common and uncommon, no matter what they may have been used for before. This morning, if you are questioning your usefulness to God, just remember how Cleo McVicker used wallpaper cleaner to make millions as Play-Doh, because he saw how it could really be used. He saw the true use within the Play-Doh, within this modeling compound, how it could really be used to be the most beneficial. Remember how God has used people who were similar to hedge apples, seemingly useless to him and looked down upon society, but he found a use for them. He made them useful to him, and he can do the same with us. But to be useful to God, we first need to have him in our lives. We need to have him in our lives so that he can use us for whatever purpose that he needs. And to do that, we need to accept the usefulness of the one, whose use God had never had to change. The usefulness of one that was always used and has always been used for the exact way that he was intended for, Jesus Christ. We can read in 1 Peter how God had always known the one who would bring salvation to his people. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 8, starting verse 18. "You were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ as a lamb without blemish and without spot. Indeed, he indeed was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifest in these last times for you, who through him believe in God and raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God." Jesus' use has never changed. It has always been to be our Savior, to be our Redeemer, to be the sacrifice for our sins. God created all of us knowing that he would need to send his only Son to die for us. He knew that, and yet he created us anyway, because he loves us so much, and he has a use for all of us as well. If any of you need assistance from the church this morning in any way, if you need to bring Jesus into your life so he can be of use to you, or if you've done that already and you need help seeing how he wants you to be used for him, you're invited to come forward as we stand and sing.